Okay, now we're ready. Go ahead.
Okay, so if you want to start with our roll call, please.
Commissioner Madigan.
Here.
Commissioner Geary.
Here.
Commissioner Anderson.
Here.
Commissioner Blackburn.
Here.
Commissioner Taggart.
Here.
And Supervisor Press.
Representative here. All righty. Next, we move on to item B, which is the approval of summary proceedings from the August 17th meeting.
I have three very small corrections.
Okay.
On page 2, between the last and second to the last, or between the second to the last and third to the last paragraph, there's a weird T. On the next page, it says kind of in the middle.
Perfectly normal.
On the next page. There we go. On the next page, under Commissioner Anderson reports, it says that Bakersfield Synody will be hosing an event. I think we'll be hosting it. So I'm sure the city does host an event. And then on page 4, under Friends of the Shelter, Judy also mentioned that Friends will be at the Peddler's Fair in Kernville the first weekend in October. I just wanted to make sure we had that down in case people need to know that. That's all.
Alrighty, so do I have a motion to see this corrected?
I make a motion.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Next, consent agenda.
Yes, I want to pull the one that we think we have off.
All right. Go ahead and discuss it now.
Sure. Want to.
All right.
I'm not going to read the whole thing. It's an email from Lenore, I believe is how her name is pronounced, Lenore Martinez. Basically, in a nutshell, she was treated very rudely by the staff at the front desk. And this is one of my big pet peeves. The impression we make at that front desk makes all the difference in the world. And you know, we don't deal with personnel issues here, but this email was sent to us, and let's just say it takes a lot to get me steamed, but this one got me pretty steamed. So I don't expect to hear personnel response, but I just hope that it's been addressed strongly.
Situation's been addressed.
Thank you.
Any other discussion on that?
She did have some positive things to say about some of the staff.
I saw.
Okay, that's true. There were some positive things, too.
All right. If I can then have a motion to proceed and file.
I'll make a motion.
Do you have a second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Next, item D, public presentations. We'll start at the front table. Second table. If you can come up to the podium and give us your name and your location.
Hi. Is that on?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sorry. Hi, I'm Rebecca Cantringman. I am at 9116 South Fairfax Road. I also work at Anderson Acres, 5801 South Fairfax Road. My name is Rebecca Countryman. I am the Education Director for Anderson Acres. We would like to invite those on the Kern County Animal Control Commission, as well as those in the audience today, to the 12th Annual AKC Responsible Dog Ownership Day to be held on October 1st, 2016 at Mill Creek at Central Park from 9 to 2 p.m. Anderson Acres and Responsible Dog Owners of Kern County bring together individuals, families, and the community to enjoy no-cost, low-cost microchip clinics, licensing and vaccinations, adoptions, blessing of the animals, country canines, which is a humans and canines dancing country western together, obedience, rally, agility, confirmation. You can meet local dog-related agencies. We have a Halloween costume contest You're welcome to dress up as well as your dog for the contest. Meet the vet. You can try agility and rally courses and see if your dog has what it takes to be a canine good citizen and much, much more. We encourage all canines to bring their humans to the wonderful event and enjoy the day.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And there's flyers and information on the back table.
I'd like to thank Rebecca, and I don't know if she remembers, but I met her yesterday at PetSmart.
Oh, you said I was a famous one. I am a celebrity for the cause.
All right, thank you. Sue, do you have anything?
Yeah, because I haven't been here in a bit. Sue Bennett, Kern Humane Society. Just a couple of things. Kern Humane's been really busy. I was not here for the September voucher day, what we call voucher day, the distribution of coupons. But they had they distributed 280 coupons to 148 people. Which I thought was pretty good. But Liz was there, so they did speed them up a little bit. Giving out is fine. How many comes back? That's what matters. And in August, we paid for 205 animals to be spayed, neutered, or treated for emergencies. And in September, we paid for 206 so far. I always get a few at the end of the month. Of interest to some of you might be, I've told you before, we do help with emergency, unusual vet bill size problems. And in August, we gave out $740 in emergency funds, and in September so far it's been $590 for 13 emergencies between dogs and cats, which brings me to, I need some suggestions, people. I have two situations that we can't help completely. If anybody has a, besides Specter, Susie Specter, I have a situation where a puppy that was adopted from Craigslist has literally a broken jaw, and the jaw after 2 months with the new owner, the jaw is set to the side and starting to close down so that all they can do is slurp up food. They've removed the eye because the damage was, the bone was poking into the eye. They've already spent $500 on this dog. $1,700 is what the vet wants. If anybody's got an idea of how to help these people, I would appreciate knowing that, because I've tried everything I can think of. That doesn't mean it's the only ones. It's just the ones that come into my head. And the other one is kind of the same thing, a $900 bill for a dog that has pressure behind the eye and needs to be removed. And I thought, I can find another vet for cheaper. I've sent her to 3 vets and I'm not getting a better price. So if anybody knows of some sort of group that can help out on that, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Sue.
What about the boards?
I've got Buster's Fund. No, that one is one that I've recommended to check with, but the others I'm not having any luck.
Okay.
Sue, have you tried Red Rover?
I think that's the one she's talking about. They're all kind of interlinked. It's like Buddy's Fund, Red from the Red Dog Group or whatever. It's all one name. I thought it was 3 different things, and it's not. As I'm going into it further.
Red Rover is actually out of Sacramento. It wouldn't be part of the Fuller's Pet Group.
Oh, okay. Well, it's Red.
Red Rover.
Red Dog.
Red Rover.
Red Rover.
That's,
okay.
You're thinking of like Big Red Buddies or something like that. Red Rover is out of Sacramento.
Yeah, the Big Red Dog. I'm thinking of the Big Red Dog. No, there's Big Red Dog. that I think is with the whole earth people,
right.
Or no kill, which I right. think is also the whole earth.
Right. Right. Red Ribbon out of Sacramento.
The Lane Foundation helps with what you're needing.
Okay.
They are based out of LA. But I did have a situation a week ago where a dog had gotten attacked. They mm-hmm. took it to a vet in LA, and the Lane Foundation paid $1,700 towards this dog being fixed.
Okay, that's where we're
so
going with this situation. I was wondering, and I haven't been home to call, but I wondered if Davis might take him as a teaching aid.
Yeah. All righty. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Okay. Terry, do you have anything? Liz?
Are we on?
We're on public presentations.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to.
Just in time.
Just in time.
My day has been so frazzled. Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the board, Director Cullen, Amber. I don't know what you've covered since I came in late, but did we talk about the performance evaluation yesterday?
No.
We didn't.
No, we haven't.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, on closed session yesterday morning was a performance evaluation item of our esteemed animal services director. And the way the board works, they have to report at the next meeting, which would be 2 o'clock yesterday afternoon, what actions were taken in closed session. And what Ms. Goldner reported was that no reportable actions were taken. This happens with 99% of the closed items agenda, by the way. So I guess Cullen is still with us as director.
And will we get a vacation?
Fun?
Yes.
Maybe.
Just to clarify for the commission, the way the board works is there's times when a department head feels the need to speak to the board in closed session, and usually the way to request that is to go through the county administrative office and request a performance evaluation. So it's not a true, as it sounds, evaluation. It's a moment that you can have in closed session to speak to the board about something you feel is important for them to be aware of.
Okay.
So that's what that was.
Because you were appointed permanent about a year ago.
Has it been that long?
Yes.
Seems like a lot longer.
Somebody asked me. I'm waiting for retirement at this point.
No.
You're waiting.
At risk of causing problems, which, you know, part of the course, there has been some discussion, Sue and I and some other people, because they call me, about, and I believe, Colin, you and I have talked about it too, about the ability of the county to euthanize animals. What I have been told by various folks who claim they know what's going on is that under what many of you will recall was the Locke versus Kern County lawsuit many, many years ago. Judge Wallace is the one who signed the order, and he has since gone on to his permanent rest. So I'm not even sure who's overseeing the department. But, and I'll admit, I last read that many years ago. I'm wondering if county council would be willing to look into, to read that decision again and see if it specifically or implicitly suggests that county animal services cannot euthanize animals on request. The reason this has come up is that I and Sue and some other people have run into folks that have very sick or very elderly dogs. There is no hope for rehabilitating them or, as the Asilomar Accords say, treat them so that they can be back into shape. And these folks can't afford to go to a vet. If we could see if there is such a provision, and frankly, I don't remember reading it years ago, I would very much appreciate a report to the commissioner, and I think you would too, from staff about what the status is. I will tell you, I moved here over 30 years ago. At that time, in the fee schedule, and I think I still have it, because I'm an archivist, the county did do euthanasia at no charge. This would relieve a number of people, because folks, as you can imagine, when they call, they're in tears, they don't know what to do. So, again, at risk of causing problems, I would really appreciate if we could look into that. That's it for now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can we make this? I have a copy of that in my office.
I actually worked on that years ago.
I do know, Liz, that there is a stipulation in there that precludes animal services or animal control at the time from owner-requested euthanasia. Whether it, how long that stays in effect for and applies is probably the council question.
Well, the problem with that is that the Hayden Act came along, and the Hayden Act provides for owner-surrendered animals. And then they go under the 7-day hold and can be euthanized at that point if medically necessary or they can't be adopted. But I'd be happy to take another read through. My understanding was it was a stipulation that was had a 5-year limit.
Okay.
But it's been a long time.
It's been a really long time.
Long 12 years, I believe.
Yeah. We need to make that a staff referral or?
Yeah, just make it a staff referral.
Okay,
I'll take care of it.
I'll make that
motion. Do you want to email me the decision? Because I think it was a Superior Court stipulation, so it's not precedent.
Okay.
I really appreciate that because there has been confusion and conflicting information, Jerry, so I really thank you.
I do not believe that we provide that service. I do not believe we provide it for free.
We did many, many years ago, but I think...
I think at one time it went up to like $20.
Exactly.
But that's still...
I mean, I remember that it's free, and then, you know, I just put $20 is better for people than... Thank you very much.
It's like
okay. All right. Thank you, Liz. Okay. Continuing down that row. Yeah,
he's on the agenda.
Oh, okay. Anybody on the back row? Got anything to say? Welcome, Bob.
Thank you.
Glad to see you guys.
Thank you.
Hi, Danny Spanks.
Oh, hi, Danny. See you back there, Heidi. All right, okay. That concludes public presentations. Let's go on to item E, which is staff announcements. We have the director's report, the volunteer update, and the spay neuter fund summary.
Just so that everybody know, I will be handling all three. There is no update on the spay neuter funding. We're just given access to be able to spend the spay neuter funds beginning of this month. So there's just not enough data to even shed any light. But there, we have issued vouchers. They are available at all locations, which is the all three county animal shelters, as well as the Ridgecrest Animal Shelter, as well as the Button Willow Family Resource Center, the Taft City Hall, Fraser Park, or Mountain Communities Family Resource Center. I don't think I'm forgetting any, but that's about it. But they're available during normal business hours at all those locations.
Colin.
Yes?
Question.
Pardon me.
Are you means testing regarding the vouchers this time around? Because we've received several calls from people who have said they have tried to go to you all for vouchers and have been told no.
The first 2 years of the voucher program, and I know we've had a voucher program around for much longer than that, but through the use of the $250,000 from the Board of Supervisors, we historically, the first 2 years of the program, we took the mindset if somebody is there to get their animal altered, we're going to get them a voucher unless they make an obscene amount of money. But we've, you know, with the allocation has been shrunk. We went from $250,000 down to $200,000. And on top of that, we just felt that it was appropriate and a good time and place that the program's been running for 2 years that we try to tighten things up a bit. And there are existing income qualifications, and we're holding people to those qualifications now. And we're requiring all the documentation that's required. So there are people that will come into the facility and apply. If they don't have the paperwork they need to prove that they meet the income qualifications, we send them home for it. And if they don't meet the income qualifications, we can't issue them a voucher. So it's just a way of making sure that the vouchers go to who needs them.
And the income qualifications are back down to the, 200% of poverty? Or
same as it was is what it was the last 2 years, which is 200% of the federal poverty level.
Are those numbers listed online?
Yes. You can go online and just get federal, just put in federal poverty level.
But it's not listed on your website. What the qualifying is?
I don't believe it.
No.
I mean, the application when you apply for the spay and neuter voucher, it says that you have income qualifications. What that income qualification is, I don't know. It's not available on the website though.
Shouldn't that be on the website?
You're probably correct. It probably should be there. We'll look into that.
Just for clarification, though, for a few months you weren't giving out vouchers at all prior to the budget being passed.
Correct. We the department ceased issuing vouchers in April. 5 months later, we picked it up again, and that was more or less just a result of, as anybody who's issued vouchers before will tell you, that there's a lag time before you realize how many vouchers you will have to pay for, because you issue 100 and maybe 75 and get used, so it's tough to gauge if you have a finite amount of money to spend on that program, how many vouchers are going to come in over the next 2 months. So we stopped them in April. Everything came in, was paid, and I think we ended up about 4,001 total surgeries out of last fiscal year's funding. And the funding wasn't granted again until just the beginning of this month. So, yeah, there was a period of about 5 months where we were not issuing vouchers, which is painful. Any other questions about that?
So much for something that didn't need a report.
just to recap, and we the voucher program will be the same as it was the last 2 years. The manner in which we go about spending the funding from the board will change a bit. We're really looking into whether or not the nonprofit approach is necessary, or whether it's the best move. You know, if you recall, the spay and neuter funding was spent in one of three ways. It was a voucher program. It was a nonprofit that was given funds to operate in a targeted zip code, several targeted zip codes. And then we had outlying clinics, too. Well, we've kind of changed where we felt that, you know, our voucher program is the most cost-effective way to get surgeries accomplished, plus they're still being sold like hotcakes. And we're just, with the limited, less funding than we've had before, we just felt that there was a need to kind of evaluate where the money's going and make some decisions based on that. So it hasn't been decided whether or not the nonprofit approach will be part of it again, but the outlying clinics, the Spanier clinics that we put together, will still continue. Those are through the Simi Valley nonprofit that handles most of our Spanier clinics. Moving right along. If those of you who aren't aware, we have a program called Pets for Vets. The Pets for Vets program is a program that provides free adoptions for veterans in Kern County. It was super successful last year. The Friends Foundation accepts donations to support those free donations. And they have not received a donation in about 2 months. So actually it's been longer than that, probably 3 months. But their funding is limited if there's any that exists at all. Supervisor Couch's office was kind enough to have this program near and dear to their heart. So they're having two fundraisers that will be in November. One of them will be at the Broken Yoke Cafe, which hasn't been solidified yet, but the other one that has been solidified is November 9th, 2016, at Tahoe Joe's. What it is there's vouchers that you would purchase. They're $20 per voucher. It provides a choice of different dinners. The money from that these vouchers goes directly to the Friends Foundation to support the Pets for Vets adoptions. So if anybody would like to purchase one of those, I'll have them here. Otherwise, probably after today, they'll be in Judy's possession. You'll have to get over to Judy first.
Bring him tonight.
You will notice that the City of Bakersfield statistics are not in the report this month. That was my mistake. I didn't include them. If anybody's interested in seeing them, I believe I have a copy. Shoot me an email. Commissioner Blackburn was kind enough to point out that the statistics for the outcomes, intakes, and euthanasia, they are compared month over month instead of year to year. So he brought that up. If anybody would like those year-to-date statistics, I have them at my desk, and I believe Commissioner Blackburn has one as well. It's just we're used to usually comparing them last year to this year. We accidentally compared month to month. Moving on to the director's report, our rescue program is still successful. 127 animals were placed through rescue in the month of August. Our foster program is still going strong. The month of August saw 135 animals enter the foster care. That's actually a fairly high number for the foster program. 200 animals currently in foster at this time, or the time it was put together. I did want to point out that in the director's report, there are some statistics about euthanasia. And if you can make heads or tails of them, as I was telling Commissioner Blackburn, I don't like that report. We're going to work on changing that report because it's a little tough to follow. But essentially, the department has reduced euthanasia to this point in the year by about 1,300 animals less than we did the year before. And that decrease in euthanasia, about 5 to 7% of total intake, is almost solely attributable to the foster care program. I will say that the department, just like all other county agencies, we're facing a lot of cutbacks and measures that we're having to take to save money. We look at programs all the time. And the foster program is a very costly program. And it's a costly program because these are animals that in years past were not provided any level of care because they're animals that are too young and they were most often summarily euthanized. And now, at this point, we're saving those animals. So we're taking an animal that had very minimal cost to care for before, and now we're providing daily care, food, water, and vet care after hours and during hours, and vaccines and follow-up exams, and spay neuter surgery and adoption. So it's a very costly program, and we have to continue to find new creative ways to support programs like the foster program, the trap near release program, things that are saving lives and also cost money to the department. So, you know, in the coming months and years, you will see Kern County Animal Services kind of change and adapt the way we do things. You know, we are going to have to take a different approach as far as funding is concerned to continue the efforts that we're doing. And what I mean by that is we're going to have to do some fundraisers and some public support or privately funded support to make sure that our programs that are producing the results that they are continue, regardless of the state of the county's budget. So, you know, it's some obstacles that we face to continue the success that we've seen, but it's obviously producing the results that we want, so we're going to find a way. Our TNR program, so far to date, 4,710 cats have been altered through the trap neuter release program. That number stays remarkably consistent every month. Somehow I think cats that maybe haven't originated in the county are coming through the county's TNR program, if I had to guess. You would think at some point the numbers would decline, but they have not. Our spay neuter clinics, we did have two spay neuter clinics in the month of August. Those are results of we do have a grant that provides spay neuter services in the city of Lamont, and it's restricted to Lamont residents. August 25th and 26th in Lamont, we had spay neuter clinics, 55 total surgeries. Spay neuter surgeries were accomplished in those two clinics. I think at this point, since the grant had started, we're up over 200 surgeries just in Lamont alone, which is a small community, so over 200 spay neuter surgeries is pretty impactful, we hope. Mm-hmm. An example of that is we occasionally, our officers will do sweeps. And what we do when we do a sweep is our officers will be out first thing in the morning, 6 a.m. We try to coincide with the time that usually the kids are going to school. And we patrol the area with as many officers as we can. We pick up stray dogs, we issue citations, and one of the most recent Lamont sweeps produced 3 stray dogs. Which is far and away less than what we would usually see. So there is some, hopeful data that maybe small municipalities like Lamont are improving as far as the population is concerned. Vaccine clinics, as you can see, they're still successful. Every Wednesday evening between the hours of 5 and 6:30 p.m., we have a vaccination clinic. It's, again, super successful still. Our off-site clinics are still successful. We will be at Responsible Dog Ownership Day, Dog Day at the park, and we will have a vaccine clinic at that park as well as Central Park, and we'll have adoptable animals as well.
So city.
Yes. Yeah. We actually, the city of Bakersfield did contact me.
No kidding.
Yes.
They're hosting. They're one of the hosts as well.
And formally invite the department to bring out adoptable animals and take part in licensing too. So
I don't think they're bringing out animals, but we will have the clinic.
Well, I believe we'll have animals out there. So adoptions. 525 animals went to adoption in the month of August. Commissioner Blackburn and I spoke about that too. Yes, that number is high. Usually a month where we adopt 300 animals is pretty successful. So 529 is significant. Year to date, 3,418 animals have found their homes through adoption. Our Petco collaboration was still successful. 12 cats were adopted from Petco locations in August. 335 have been adopted overall through the partnership. Month of August also was a promotion, Dog Days of Summer, as I've said many times before. If you walk in any animal shelter, any Kern County animal shelter, the odds are pretty strong that there will be a promotion going on when you walk in the door. I will let everybody know that, we along with budget cuts and facing financial obstacles to success for the department, we have to take a look at everything. And one of the things that we're having to take a look at is our promotional pricing. We adopt dogs and cats during promotions, usually for $20 for dogs and $10 for cats. And that's sort of a residue of how we used to have to operate at Mount Vernon, because we had to lower the price point just to get the animals out. But we're facing, financial difficulties, and it's something that we have to look at. So you may see in the future our promotions may not be $20 and $10 anymore. They may be $40 and $20 or somewhere around there. But it'll be something that we have to constantly monitor to see if we're still having the same success that we have in the past and get that price point that we're comfortable at where we're still having success. Our volunteers, our volunteer coordinator, Mr. George, is here. However, he's got a boot on his leg. So I'm going to speak to him, and you can nod. I believe we have 147 active volunteers at the moment.
Well, actually, a little bit more, but yeah.
That's a little bit more than that?
For the report.
And a total of 2,260 hours in the month of August were donated, approximate equal to 13 staff members. In my closed session meeting with the board, I told them that dollar figure, $53,263, and he almost all had a heart attack. When I think they thought that I had the money in my pocket or something. and it is, most kids have gone back to school here fairly recently, so we've seen a bit of a dip in the active volunteers, but that's to be expected. Field services has gone strong. 19 dogs were returned to their owners in the field in the month of August. By the way, that's the highest that we've had since we've been keeping track of these, at least for these statistics. 77 dogs were secured on property by animal control officers in the month of August. Again, in theory, those are animals that could have come to the shelters that did not. Just one more note to, and I thank Liz for this as well, but the department has been trying quite some time to put together a sort of a retention program to, we look at statistics and we try to figure out a solution for each statistic. And one of the statistics that we see that sometimes is a little alarming is how many animals are surrendered to the shelter. I'm looking at 5 per day on average that get surrendered to the shelter. We've been able to improve a lot of statistics across the board for county animal services. The one thing we haven't had any effect on is the amount of animals that are coming in surrendered. which is, you know, microcosm of a larger problem. And we've been working with volunteers such as Liz to try and get some input on how to put together a program that can help people that are in crisis that feel they need to get rid of their animal. We're developing a program. It's going to start out October 3rd. It's Monday. There'll be a press release that goes out next week. We're basically just going to have an employee who has 18 other jobs that they have to do, but an employee who will have a phone line and an email address for our pet retention program. If anybody is in a position where they feel they need to surrender their animal, to see if the department can help before the animal comes to the shelter. And, you know, this is a pilot program to see what kind of response we get from the public. It's not something mandated where you have to call this number just yet. It's an assistance program where we can provide some direction on how to seek out other opportunities before you have to surrender the dog to the shelter. We'll be rolling that out Monday, October 3rd, and our rescue coordinator will be heading up that program. And with that, that finishes the director's report, and I can answer any questions that there may be.
Are you sure? Okay. I'm just curious on your vaccination clinics, how come the microchips are so low?
I can't draw a like, black and white conclusion, but my guess is that we have increased the cost of the microchips. It was free for the most part, and we've increased the cost to
$15.
Oh.
So that's still cheap.
That may be a part of the reason for that.
I do want to let you know that I support the enforcing of the low-income requirements for spay-neuter vouchers. I've been singing this song for a number of years, but statistics show that if you can get low-income people to spay and neuter their animals' intakes decrease. So that's, again, addressing the statistics. I guess that's it. Thank you.
Yeah, just to follow up on that. You know, I think that we're learning a lot with the spay-neuter program. We learn a lot every day in animal services, but... You know, one of the things that we learn about running a program like spay-neuter or a program like foster or a program like TNR is that you have to adapt. And what worked 2 years ago may not work now. We had results and from the first year of the spay-neuter efforts and the second year of the spay-neuter efforts, and we would be irresponsible if we didn't look at those results, delve into them, and try to find out if the statistics that are coming out are completely accurate, or are they skewed, or is something not making sense, do we need to shift in a different direction? And we did. We sat down and looked at those stats and saw what was coming through. We felt the need that it's time and place to make sure that we're using the money appropriately, efficiently, and it's getting into the hands of the people that need it the most, especially when we're looking at cuts. That's the reasoning behind that decision to kind of hold to the requirements that were there in the first place.
Question on your need for sponsorship or donations and things. Say we get a dog food company or something that wants us. Can they be specific to say the foster program, or would it be required that their donations incorporate the entire facility?
I'll have Blake correct me on this, but I believe any donation that comes into the Department of Animal Services can be specified to a particular program that they want to go to support.
It just sometimes how we track that can get a little tricky. So if they want to give food and they just want it to go to the foster program, then, you know, it would depend on how much we'd have to talk about the logistics of that.
Okay.
Yeah, the largest cost for the foster care program is medical expense.
Right.
You know, our department can use all donations that may come in, but the foster care program is the cost is in the medical expense. So, you know, financial donations would support the program the best.
Okay.
Plus, with our fosters, we like to keep them on the same diet, same food that they have been on since they came in. So. Right. Try not to change around, and sometimes when we subsist on donations, you're changing food left and right all the time. So,
right. What brand are you using currently?
It's the Victor Super Premium brand that that the shelter uses.
Okay.
It's not a commercially available dog food.
Victor is.
Is it?
Yeah, I can get it. Okay, and then now I know many years ago we had some vaccines and stuff done. Is that something that would be a benefit again if that could happen?
Yes. Yeah, we actually we do receive donations of vaccines on a fairly regular basis.
Okay,
yes, they do come in handy.
All right, cool. All right, well, just have to take your cap on. So
do I.
Madam Chair, could I ask two questions? It's Liz, since you're looking down.
Well, I know it's you. Well, quickly, because you're cutting in Commissioner Blackburn.
Okay. Oh, I didn't realize. But you're going to go on stats, right?
Yes.
Okay. Director Cullen, you referred before to the cuts that the board has made, and I read it was vacant positions, and I see Ms. Villarruz is here, for 24 months. Did that decision affect animal services at all?
I mean,
have you had vacant positions for 24 months?
We have. The positions are mostly unfunded, but like the positions that have been vacant are like the deputy director position for animal services.
Okay, so it,
the public information officer for animal services. The office services supervisor for animal services.
It hasn't been 24 months. So what, it's been two.
In all honesty, you know, we okay, we're not the only county. There's 21 other county departments or something like that, and they all serve a purpose, and we're no more important than any other one. We take the cuts just like everybody else, but, you know, we try to make sure that, you know, between Blake and I and some other staff, we try to make sure that when we have positions that are in need of deletion or shipping out to other areas of the county, that it's administrative and not sort of the frontline staff, the people that we need to care for the animals on a daily basis so that it doesn't affect the care that we can provide on a daily basis. So we're thankful and lucky that it hasn't affected us on the front lines just yet.
So from your perspective, that decision did not deteriorate the ability of animal services to do what you want to do?
It's made it more difficult,
right.
But it's not preventing us from being able to move forward.
And the other question, since you brought up the issue of donations, I've been under the impression that I cannot lay $100 on you directly. I can give you.
He doesn't want to touch it. I can tell you that. He won't touch it. It goes on his desk, and he goes.
Well, yeah. But so, when you're talking about these donations, are you excluding hard cold cash and including blankets, towels, newspapers, all that? And if you are excluding the financial, the, you know, real cash money or credit cards or whatever, what is the option?
So, I think this will answer your question. Yes, the department can accept cash donations over the, you know, at any one of the animal shelters. We always have been able to. We receive quite a few donations. You know, there's times when we have our friends at the Kern County Animal Shelters box out front.
Yeah.
And if Blake happens to be up there and sees somebody sticking a dollar bill in there, he might say, hey, why don't you give that to the kind lady that works for the county right now? So, yes,
I wouldn't
we
do that.
Take cash donations.
But, yes, we get cash donations all the time. I think then the county council can correct this. We can't solicit them, I think, is where, right?
It is discouraged. You can solicit them, but it is discouraged. The thing is, for a county department to take a donation, you want to remove any appearance of impropriety. Therefore, it's in the employee's best interest that they not accept cash. A check would be fine. A cashier's check would be fine. If they accept cash, then we have to make sure that the employee cannot be accused of not necessarily transferring the full cash to the till. So that's the real concern. Write a check.
But we have a system of control in place. You know, if you walk up to the cash register and there's nobody else around and there's one person in the front, make sure you get a receipt, and that's, you know, for what you give. But I mean, if you give it to us in the back, there's five people around. I'm going to take. If you set it on his desk, I'll snatch it before he can even touch it and give it to Joel to process.
Okay. Yeah, county policy is intended to prevent an employee from hitting you up while you're at the park or something like that. There's no solicitation unless you're doing it on Nick's approval.
Okay, then the follow-up question is, how does that relate to the x-ray machine?
Well, the x-ray machine, if and when it does open up for donations, most of it already is, those funds will go directly to the Friends Foundation. And then the Friends Foundation, once we determine the overall cost, which could be astronomical the more we research into it. And just to explain, Lois Henry wrote an article in, not last Sunday's paper, the week before, about our veterinarian. And she included in the veterinarian, in the piece about the veterinarian, that our veterinarian would like an x-ray machine. It was kind of said in passing, but she kind of latched on to that. She did a follow-up piece to... just to say how much support that she received from people wanting to donate to the cause to provide an x-ray machine for the county animal shelter. I was besieged by calls and emails from people wanting to donate. The Friends Foundation was receiving correspondence. People were wanting to donate money to Lois Henry. I told them not to. But that was... mostly a friend's, you know, they approached me. Cecilia approached me. Okay, Liz may have approached me. Those donations will go directly to the Friends Foundation for an x-ray machine for the county animal shelter. And once a total cost is known, well, then there's a target goal. And if we meet that target goal, then Friends would disperse the funds to go ahead and purchase the machine.
But if somebody comes in tomorrow and wants to lay a grant on you, not Friends Foundation, and specify... it's for the x-ray machine, you will accept it.
Yes.
As long as it's in the check.
As long as it's not cash.
Yes, but the true answer is we would implore people to go donate to the Friends Foundation if it's for the x-ray machine.
We have to give them a receipt, and then what we do with it... if they did it tomorrow, I would take it. The accounting can get a little not sketchy but complicated. But that's why I'm here, to work through the complications. If somebody has money that they're going to give us, the rule is you take it.
I need to kind of cut this back because we're very jumping into the...
Okay. So, does that answer your questions, Liz? Please. Yes.
Yes.
We can talk after.
But it sounds like your preferred method, Larry. I'm never going to sit behind you again. The preferred method would be to the Friends Foundation.
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That did answer my question.
Thank you. Okay, Commissioner Blackburn.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much. Director Cohen, yes. We did have a long conversation today. I was trying to do my normal numbers crunching, but because we were comparing last August to this August, it didn't really make a lot of sense. But I will tell you this much. I mean, last August, our save rate was 53%. This August, our save rate was almost 66%. So if August is an indicator of each and every month, you can see the progress we're making, but hopefully we'll get those updated figures sometime in the near future. So that's good. He did, I didn't ask him to do it at the last second, but he did give me an updated version of the euthanasia comparisons of year-to-date last year versus year-to-date this year. And as you said, it's about 1,300 animals fewer that were euthanized, which represents about a 25% decrease from 2015, so that's excellent news.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it is. Because that's really what I'm looking at. I'm looking at the bottom line when I do this. So, great news, and we can see that all the efforts are paying off. I've got a few questions. I did want to commend, I mean, you can see the morale in the whole county when you get somebody from Animal Services being on the front page of the newspaper, right? Pet detective, that's huge. It wouldn't have happened a few years ago. But that was a nice article. I noticed it was embossed and on the front deal there at the office. So that man deserves a lot of credit. I'd like to meet him sometime. So anyway, yeah, I'd like to. You mentioned donations. You track that, right?
Yes.
Do you happen to know what your average donations per month are?
I do.
Not even a ballpark? Okay. I had somebody tell me about 8 months ago that they were going to send in $500 from a management company. I don't know if they ever did or if you ever got it. I was just curious how you track that.
Yeah, I don't have any idea what our average monthly intake is for donations.
Actually, that donation was made, if it's who I think you're talking about.
It's what?
A donation for $500 was made, if it's who I think you're talking about.
Oh, okay, you're familiar with it. Okay.
Yeah.
Great, thank you very much. I just want to get that confirmed.
Commissioner Blackburn,
they were going to send it. I didn't know if they did.
We have a revenue key on our budget for donations, and so I can give you that information if you'd like it. I can give you what we took in donations last year. The average, that's a tough one because it's we'll get none this month and next month we'll get $500 and then we'll get none again. So, you know, but... you know, so yeah.
I was just curious because I'm going to help you in that regard in drumming up some money because promotion is part of what I do for a living, and so if I can help you in any way, I will. Touching lightly on the foster, you have 200 in foster care right now. What's normal? Would you say over the last?
I mean, it's a normal number is somewhere around 100.
100, so it's double. Okay, so we don't have any way of knowing what normal is, so okay, good.
But keep in mind, you know, the foster program hasn't been around forever. We've limited data to go on. But
okay.
As I spoke to you earlier today, a new normal seems to be created every month.
Every month is a new normal, I understand that, and that's good. We just want to have some kind of a barometer for knowing. I happen to go into, I don't think this microphone's working, Amber. I don't know the deal is. I keep clicking and it keeps going off. But anyway, I happen to go to the Petco on Gosford last week and met the manager. His name is Aaron. And this guy is extremely passionate about trying to help out in any way that he can. It says here they placed 12 cats between two locations during the month of August. He said he can do 2 to 6 a week himself if he's given the animals. And there was only 2 in there because it was on a Tuesday. And most of the time I think they're brought in for the weekend. So I talked to Jeff and Lisa down there last Thursday. Did you make it down there did you go to the Petco store and talk to him?
He called me today and we got an appointment for 2:30 on Friday.
Okay, all right, good. This guy's very passionate about trying to help out. He says, we're not talking about outdoor space. He's giving you indoor space for an event. So Lisa was saying, well, we don't want outdoor space. I said, we're not talking outdoors. Indoor. Indoor space. He'll give you whatever that he can do. I guess the last thing, and I know there's something I'm forgetting. But the last thing I wanted to ask Ms. Bradley on the ethics training, I was sent an email months ago, and this is for all of us because we have to do this every 2 years. It gave us two opportunities to do it. Like, I think there was a session in April and maybe one in September, and I've missed them both.
You can do it online. It's really easy.
I can do it online. Okay, we'll talk later then.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not familiar with any emails that went out on ethics training.
Okay.
So it probably went out through the clerk of the board's office.
Maybe. Okay, I thought maybe you might know about that. So, okay. Those are my questions. Thank you, Chair.
All right, thank you. So that concludes staff reports. Good job, as always. August was a good month.
It was.
Surprisingly, for a vacation month. All right, Commissioner reports and announcements.
Excuse me, Commissioner, we need a motion to receive and file.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can I please have a motion?
Make a motion.
Second?
Second.
All in favor? Aye. Any opposed? Okay, now we can go on to announcements. Commissioner Tiger? Commissioner Buffer?
No, but we've got a special guest speaker by the name of Chris Carlberg that's going to be here in a few minutes, but okay. I have no other announcements besides that.
Okay.
Save in line for old business.
Okay.
I just have a few things.
Is it on?
Yeah.
On. I forgot to ask action from the rest of the commission. I would like to reply to this person to let her know that we took her email very seriously. Mm-hmm. Can I do that as a representative of the commission? I'm not going to go into any length, any detail, or any personnel issues. To say that we received it, we discussed it, and I'm very sorry.
We had this conversation.
You had the conversation. It has to be a response from the entire commission.
It has to be a response from the entire commission. You can vote to approve. Ms. Madigan sent a response to the email. I would request that you have it reviewed by council first, but otherwise, yes.
You're so mean about that.
I know. I'm sorry.
All right. I will let them review it.
Sorry, not sorry.
Occasionally.
All right. It's up to you guys. Do you want to go with that?
I think it's good as long as we keep it kind of general.
Yes, it'll be very general. I just don't want to lose a potential adopter down the road and or all the people that you talked to.
Okay. Let her know that we did receive it, yes, and we do it very seriously.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So do we have a motion? Do we need a motion? I need a motion.
You need a motion.
I need a motion.
Okay, go ahead.
I'll make a motion.
Okay, do I have a second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so you can write it. Okay. Here it gets reviewed before it comes out.
Okay. Also, I was in part of the discussion Liz had with people about euthanizing public animals, and I'm very, very supportive in following up on that, see if we can create an environment where that can be addressed. The other thing that I've been talking to people about, but I have done diddly about, is several years ago, I created a one-page flyer, one for dogs, one for cats, that had all the voucher programs, the spay-neuter voucher programs. It changed pretty frequently. I had a rough time keeping up with it. Oh, come on. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I was going to show it to you, but it'll take me forever. The county took it and updated it to some degree, but it's on the website. I was going to show it to you. But it needs to be updated, and needs to be updated on a regular basis. My idea is to put it on a website somewhere where anybody can get to it and look it up, and then have a handful of people who represent different organizations go in and make the changes as they occur, so it's a real-time document at all times. That's as far as I've gotten, but I would really like to see that be available because it's changed so much, there's no way I could keep up with it. I just kind of threw my hands up, and you guys were doing it anyway. And I've looked around, and that's a few websites to see if we could, that would host it. If you have any ideas on how to go about doing that, maybe I could just create a website that says Kern County Spay-Neuter Options, and that's all it would be. It would be just the list of all the voucher programs. But anyway, this just wanted to throw that out there. I won't be tackling that real soon. I am having my fifth of five surgeries on October 5th. The other knee will be replaced. I anticipate it being a quick one because the other knee was pretty quick. So I won't be here in October, probably not November. And if you guys decide to go dark in December, I won't be here then either. I really like to say I'll be back in November, but I don't know. So if all else, I'll see you in January. That particular project is not something I'm going with right at this moment, but I would like to see that available because it does change so much, and it is very important for a lot of people. Vicki has an idea.
Well, we have the information. We're more than happy to put it on our website. I mean, we have a page dedicated to vouchers anyway.
Yeah, I know. I looked at the site, and it hardly had anything on it.
Well, hardly anything will provide any information, so okay. That's the information. I'm trying to run a clinic, so if someone wants to go see information, we're we're more than happy to put it on there.
Okay,
but,
we'll work on that. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we're more than happy to host it.
Yeah, and that would be probably one of the most logical places to put it, too.
So.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Thank you. We wish you luck on your surgery.
Thank you. This is the last one.
All right. I just want to reiterate, we hope to see all of you at Responsible Dog Ownership Day on October 1. And that's it for staff. Okay, on to old business. Item 1, staff referrals, a follow-up on the Ridgecrest property.
I don't have too many updates on the Ridgecrest property. I did, along with the senior officer and the area officer, pay a visit to the Ridgecrest property, and I won't get into the specifics about what occurred while I was on property, but there's continuing ongoing visits to the property as a result.
Great. Thank you. Okay, item 2. Is Christopher here? Okay, Christopher, you're up.
I did want to say a few things while he's coming up here. I met Chris a year ago, and he just showed up at one of our meetings. I don't think this is working.
Tap it. It is on.
It's on.
Yeah. Is it really? Okay, good.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Can you hear you?
Can you? Good. Before I met him, I happened to read an article in a Time magazine about a year before I met him, and it talked about the importance of bees. Now, bees are not animals, granted, but they're part of the ecosystem, and what I learned from that article was pretty amazing, that about 70% of the food that we consume on this planet, bees need to be there to pollinate it so we can eat it. So, I mean, that's why they're so important, and it talked about why they're, you know, that they're dying, and it's a mystery. They're not really sure. There's a lot of different reasons that they die, and so whenever he came forward and introduced himself, I thought, this is pretty amazing that he's here, and I asked him to come back, and he's back now for the third time. But I wanted to talk about, you know, the fact that he's here, and he also has a side business of making money, since that seems vertically integrated with what he's doing. So anyway, Christopher Carlberg, you're on.
All right. Good evening, everyone. My name is Christopher Carlberg. I've been here before with the Bee Rescue.
Use the microphone, please.
Okay. Good evening. Can you hear me, sir?
Yes.
My name is Christopher Carlberg, and I'm with Bee Rescue. This is our second season here in Kern County, and I just wanted to come in tonight and give you an update. We do relocate honeybees from home, commercial property, office, just about wherever. They, you know, beehives, you've probably seen them make their home in a sewer box, in a wall, and so we come and get them wherever they are. We don't kill. This is the fourth county that we operate in California, and I'm really excited to tell you tonight that we had our third referral through the commission since I saw you last. It was with Sue and her husband, Mr. and Mrs. Bennett, and they heard me talk last time, and they called me right away, and so we were able to get bees removed from their eucalyptus tree. It was in the trunk of the tree.
Oh, and, wow. And he was there until 2 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, my God.
Getting the bees out of the tree.
Wow.
Well, I learned a lot. I learned a ton from Chris about moving bees and when is the best time.
Yeah, it was a really good time getting to know Mr. and Mrs. Bennett, and they also had some rescued horses on their property that were part of the mix there, and so it was just a good time, and we're able to safely remove the bees out to the alfalfa farm up outside of Wasco, which is where we have been relocating all the bees from these four counties this season. So for some numbers for you all, we're just approaching 100 for this year, somewhere between 90 and 100. It was in Kern County, we had less than 10, so we're working on that.
Is that 100 hives?
Right.
Wow.
Relocated.
Wow.
So Orange County, we had about 15. So, you know, these aren't me personally, all of them. A lot of them are calls I get in, and we have beekeepers in the different areas, so I send them out, and they relocated to their own location. But a lot of them do end up here. So Ventura County, we had actually 60 hives, and a lot of those we did have a hand in, and they're still up here right now. And then in Riverside County, we had less than 10. So pretty good numbers. We're working on growing that number in Kern County. I live here now as my home base, so I'm really happy to be a part of the commission and get to know all of you. I feel like right at home because, you know, we're rescuing creatures, even though, you know, they're not big and fuzzy. They're little and fuzzy. But Anderson, I needed to contact you. I just found your card.
Oh, no worries.
But we're basically, I also have a request. We're looking to get plugged in with youth organizations, 4-H. I'm happy to go and speak. I'm happy to teach what I know to young ones, volunteers that are interested in learning. And so I'd like to use this off time in the winter to go around to any high school functions, any, you know, if you have no high school science teacher, Mr. Blackburn's going to introduce me to a contact he knows here in Bakersfield. But 4-H is where I got plugged in a lot down in Orange County, and then I was a big part of the Scouts growing up, so Boy and Girl Scouts. If you have any pointers on that, please.
Fair is opening today.
Okay.
We're all out there.
Oh, okay. That's where I need to be. Then. Okay. Okay. I think that was it. I have a little bit of the fruit of the bees tonight, so however you want me to. I have some. Cups I can pass around and sample.
Okay. While you're there, I wanted to mention this also. My daughter is a graduate of Bakersfield Christian High School. Graduated there 3 years ago. And they all have to do a senior report on something. And one of her classmates happened to do a report on what's happening to the honeybees, like they're dying, why they are. And it was a very interesting report that she did. And in fact, it was so interesting that Davis gave her a full ride scholarship so she would study with them. Because they think it's that important, and it is that important, that we as average Americans don't understand that yet, but they are that important. But she got a full ride scholarship, and in fact, I called the principal today of Bakersfield Christian to figure out a way to talk with her and maybe debrief her a little bit on as to what she's learned in the 3 years of college. So it's a big deal. Most times when people are called out to remove bees at a crazy location, guess what? They get killed. Yeah. He doesn't do that. He saves them. And he's the only guy in town probably that does save them, as far as I know. And he did mention about the honey. I think it's, you call it a summer blend? Is that what you call it? Summer?
Right. So if you don't know, bees are responsible for helping, you know, to grow peaches, apricots, blackberries, strawberries, tomatoes, almonds. The list just keeps kind of going from there. Plums, oranges, lemons. So this right here is just a blend of actually alfalfa and cotton. Mm-hmm. And it's what we've got a lot of here in the valley, and the bees can make honey. And it's actually really good for you and pretty good tasting. So how do you want to do that?
Well, I wanted to... Go ahead, Jeff, and I have a comment.
Chris, it's something that kind of occurred to me. I mean, I think we've all seen the hives along 99, just a rough number, an average, or sort of what kind of numbers of bees are in a single hive, so we can get an idea what that number is times 100.
Okay, so there are about minimum of 5,000 bees in a, you know, if you just see a swarm in a tree somewhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, you might find one that's real small, like a softball size, and then you're looking at more like 2,500. But for the most part, any swarm you'll see in a tree is at least a football size, and that's about 5,000, and then just grows from there. You know, a normal bee box that you see on the side of the farm road, that's minimum 10,000 bees.
Wow.
So, you know, you see them all stacked up, and mm-hmm. that's a lot of bees. So they...
Awesome.
Yeah, so I've been doing a lot of research. I have a little bit of knowledge that I'd love to share with the youth or with anybody if you have any questions, but you know, I just consider bees important, and so that's why I'm here.
Thank you so much.
One other thing that I learned from this, and you're next, is I didn't realize that there was a thing called cotton honey. I had no clue that you use bees to pollinate cotton? I lived here all my life, and so was Larry Keller. I don't think he knew it either.
Well, I have a correction.
I didn't know.
So they do make honey from cotton, but it's actually, from what I understand, it's kind of like the oak tree. It's actually, you heard of honeydew, the fruit, but it's called dew or honeydew, and it collects on the bottom of the leaves. The leaves actually perspire this dew from the cotton. And so I don't know that they have a whole lot to do with producing cotton.
But it's still made from...
Like they do alfalfa or almonds, but the honey is made from the plant, the nectar.
One thing I want you to mention is, if you buy a can of sous vide honey, why don't you describe real quick, quickly, how that honey is put together, and where does it come from?
Okay, so...
You go to Bonds and you got sous vide honey there.
Right, so basically you've got thousands of beekeepers nationwide, right? And a lot of them nowadays, their prime focus is almond pollination. The way that it has been organized, almonds pay the most. That drives their income. That's what beekeepers are about. So honey production has become a real sideline for a lot of beekeepers. And so, beekeepers, a lot of my friends, we had, 30 barrels last year, 25 barrels. And, it's more for them, it's just how can they get rid of it, really. And so what they do is, sous vide provides an opportunity for them to get rid of their honey. They collect thousands of barrels from thousands of beekeepers, bring it to one central location. And of course, they can't just handle one barrel at a time, be careful with it, and just pour jars out of it. They have to, make a system out of it. So they heat it and pressure filter it. And of course, as you know, that does take some of the natural antioxidants out of there. And I'm not sure the details of what that does nutritionally, but I know it doesn't taste as good.
Well, one thing that I want everyone to know, I'm a holistic guy by nature, and if you have allergies, like everybody in my family, and I'd like to meet the first person in Bakersfield that doesn't have an allergy of some sort, one of the best remedies is local honey. You're not going to get that from sous vide honey. You got to get local honey if you really want to do it in a natural way, and anything you take, there's going to be side effects. So this would be one way of doing it. So I don't know how you want to, we can maybe...
Pass them around if you want.
Why don't we do it after the meeting?
Yeah. Okay.
I wanted you to come in and at least explain to everybody what you do and how you do it, that you're here, and you've got cards for anyone that might want one.
I do. Yeah, thanks a lot.
And you know what? This lady back, did you have a question that I...
No, I just wanted his contact details because I feel come as far as Tehachapi. I'm sure we can drum up some talks there.
Okay, well, that's excellent.
I think I have them in my backyard.
Chris, could you tell me that?
This is kind of off topic. I'll have them in the usefulness you can have them in the evening.
A what?
Because I have them all over my front door. Can I kill those?
Wasps, yeah, they do a little bit of pollination. They're not quite as, I would say, hardworking as the honeybee. I mean, the honeybees have more numbers and they can do a lot more. But honestly, when I get a call for those, it's really rare that I try to rescue them unless there's a special request. Just because they sting hard and it hurts.
Chris not only rescues the bees, but he is, for anyone who has kids, he is a fantastic teacher. He's into it, he understands his program, and he can start from here and get me all the way through with all the silly questions I was asking him. He was perfectly easy to deal with. So, yeah. Call Chris when you have bees.
Thank you. All right, on to item 3, save a life.
I believe that was something that one of the commissioners had asked us to bring back on old business repetitively. It's I really don't have any updates, to be honest with you. That was it's an ongoing animal situation.
Are the cats still in the county's custody?
Yes.
Let's clarify that.
The majority of the cats are still in the county's possession.
All right. Thank you.
Was that the clarification?
Yes.
Okay. Item four, our preps, emergency prep subcommittee. You have guests.
I have guests. Yes, I do. Oh, it works. Oh, make it work. Okay, we continue to meet monthly with our Lariat group, and Officer Sugg has joined us. Hopefully she'll continue to. So what we're doing is we're still working on a plan, mainly focusing on large animals, domestic large animals, not the cattle herds out there. But we can easily add in domestics once the plan is put together. And our group is working on the Greater Tehachapi Valley area, and our hopes is to take our plan and mesh with what Kermit County Animal Services is working on currently now as well. So what I wanted to do, so you believe we're doing something, is I have I have two presenters that are part of our Lariat group. They're also part of the Bear Valley Equine
Plan.
Yes. They meet with us monthly. They're working with us to put this whole thing together, and their bios are huge, so I don't have time to go into it. So we'll get to that when we get to other aspects of this plan and other presentations. So what I'd like to do is introduce Fiona Nelson. Fiona.
Hello.
And Jeannie Taylor. If you guys can come up here.
Do you have the ability to do the presentation? Do we have a computer? Can we very quickly put the laptop, plug it together?
I might be able to do it on mine, but that's the space my screen is.
We have to.
Yeah, the projector I don't think is.
We don't have it.
Oh, we don't have it.
Yeah, that didn't come together in time.
Oh, it didn't?
I'm going to be able to let you use this if
I have it locked up, or we can put it in, but then only the commissioners are going to be able to see the pretty pictures.
We can move. Can you just put it up here and we'll move? No, it doesn't. No, it won't work for them.
I don't know how to put my computer up to that. But.
Yeah, because the pictures are an integral part of their presentation, and they've managed to bring it down to
17 minutes. And for those of you who know me, you'll know how hard that is.
We have to coordinate that with IT ahead of time.
Neither projector worked. They needed a key. We weren't able to get the key.
Oh, okay.
We do actually have a data projector with us, a laptop and a data projector for those of us who do emergency preparedness all day, every day. My husband's starting to worry.
Do we have
20 minutes that would give us a couple minutes to set up?
Yes, we do.
Yeah, all right. That'd be great. Thank you for having that.
While you're doing that, do we have a report from friends?
Judy's not here.
Okay.
All right. Do I get to keep the honey as well?
No. So,
if everybody wants to take a 5-minute break while they're setting up.
I've been asked to work for 15 years. I actually did it. I don't need no more thanks for it. I got to get a break.
I'm just loving
I have one of them.
Oh, okay.
And you see, we've attracted Jennifer Ray's and Jennifer's tears.
So your destination may be quite far away. It's not just like if you've got the cats and the kids in the car, you just have to get away from the flames. Now you have to go somewhere and unload them and find shelter.
So as I said, our plan is based off of our equine emergency plan that we have for Bear Valley. We've practiced, this is just the communications function of a total plan that has a staging function as well as a sheltering function at our equestrian center, which you can see here. We believe that this communications function is important enough to pull out and share that around with other communities. And Fiona and I presented this at the CERT conference a couple weeks ago.
National. 600 attendees from all over the United States.
Yeah. Not in our class. It's a little smaller. Okay, so this plan is super simple. It, as I said before, it does not replace your, for Kern County, the Ready Kern or something along that line. It is an early notification plan. You get, but first you make sure that your community actually wants something like this and that your animal owners want this. Most of them do. Talk with the owners, talk with your emergency services people, talk with the animal services people so that we can get some coordination between it, because this is a function above and beyond the normal response, so you need that buy-in. We have a checklist that we provided to the commissioners as part of the packet that kind of starts out people, and if anybody here wants something like this for their community, email us, we're happy to share it. It's super simple. It's talk to people. It's get out and show them what they need to do to repair. Show them that they can do this on their own. As we said, it does not replace the official notifications, but it does add that local knowledge and that personal touch. It's a phone call. It's a email if that's what your community decides they want to do, or text if your owners do texting and such. We've got about half and half of our owners don't. But it makes it so that you know what's coming. And even if the first notification is, hey, there's a fire, we know it's in this area. And you can reach out to those owners directly in that area. In our community, we base it off of our cert blocks. And the majority of our fires happen to be in our high country. And so we can target those people specifically. One of our fires, the first one, was down near the valley floor, in a very long block. So we knew the area, and we could say, we need to start with these people. It's going to affect them. Not call everybody, but call these people personally. Something we found, well, as we said, social media is a big part of this, and it's something that we're building on now. With Larry, we actually started with the social media because that's where the need was. We had people saying, how can I help? And we had people saying, I need help, and getting them together was a big part of it. Now, we do this unofficially because we have no insurance. Bear Valley doesn't have insurance for this. So if you call and you say, I need help, and Fiona's let me know she already can provide help, I will give you two each other's phone number and let you work it out. And so far, we've had no issues. We've been able to take care of all the owners that needed help. Real quick, I don't remember if it comes up. When we first started this plan, the idea was, you know, I would always call up and say, hey, you got a fire coming. You need to really get serious about, you know, figuring out if you're going to stay, if you're going to call somebody. And you would say, yes, thank you. Okay, I will take care of that. Click. 2 minutes, max. We've found that on average, we've had two calls so far and six fires that have gone that way. All the rest of them have taken at least 6-7 minutes of, are you sure? Nobody's told me. The fire department hasn't called me. The police department hasn't called me. It's been, if it wasn't so sad, it'd be really funny. So, as we said, this is part of a first step. This is something that volunteers can do, a community can do, without a whole lot of hoopla. Get to know your community, get to know your horse and mule owner, or whatever you decide you need for your community. If you want to do llamas and pigs and sheep and goats, then go with that. You know, decide what you need for your community. Get some preparedness information out to your owners so that they know that they are part of the solution, not waiting for someone to come get them. And get a bunch of volunteers that can help with the notifications. It's really that simple. I mean, it takes a little bit more, but on the whole, it is just that simple. We're putting this out to anybody who'll listen to us, and thank you for listening to us. And then this is going to go towards the larger county plan. We'll probably end up working this for our community with our CERT teams. For another community, it might be animal services, volunteers, if we decide to do something like this. This is just a first step, a first crack at this. And we're learning at every fire. We're going to probably learn at flooding and mudslides this winter, and then again next summer we'll learn at those fires. But just like any disaster, it's just ongoing learning, ongoing adjustments to your plans. Are there any questions for us?
And can I just say that our plan has been amazingly successful. It has, fortunately for us, because in the first fire we learned a lot. It has been
so successful that we have ensured every equine that we knew of was taken out of the face of danger. Every single animal was accounted for. We knew where they were, and we got them out. And they were in the path of wildfires, some of them. We've been really lucky. Kern County Fire Department, bless them. They've saved Bear Valley every time. But it could have been a very different scenario.
And just so you all know, Nick, you have one or two trailers.
Emergency trailers?
Livestock trailers.
Two.
Two. That's it. So if something were to go like the Erskine fire, we're going to need a lot more trailers. And that's where the social media Facebook page comes in, where people just come out of nowhere. And I mean, there were hundreds offering. So anyway, this is the beginning a big solid plan. And we're going to continue to have these guys pop in now and then as we progress in our plan.
And if anybody has anything to contribute, if you've learned something that we've missed or passed over, please tell us in some way or another, and we can, you know, then think about incorporating that.
Okay, from what I gain, this is like just networking to get people talking to each other. So if one area has a problem with fire coming, that then we'll have a network of who we can call to get trailers in there.
Yeah.
Because I know like four in Bread Valley.
Right. Well, one of the things we're focusing on is what we call the buddy system. We're raising awareness all the time. It's very interesting. Every little thing you do snowballs out. And for example, I went camping with a bunch of people from Bear Valley. Fire comes over the ridge at 3 a.m. We're already in 15 minutes to go, compared to the other people who had no idea what to do. And research shows that even if you've only thought about emergencies, you stand a much better chance of survival. So it's awareness on a whole bunch of levels. And again, we're available to do presentations if you want. Hey, this is how you get your horses ready. These are the things you need to think about.
Yeah.
Your buddy system's very important. You need a buddy nearby. She's my buddy, Fun Dog. Out of the valley, she'll look after my animals. I have a buddy in Stallion Springs, so if I have to get my horses out and take them to hers, if she's threatened, I'll take my trailer to hers and help bring her horses back to mine. Very important.
And that's that personal preparedness. This template plan is to take that next level where it's almost a community preparedness or a community awareness, and then it's a community buddy system. So that, for example, what we have our volunteers come to a central location, and we have a list already ready to go, and they know they can look at the addresses and know who we need to start contacting. When we go to a greater Tehachapi Valley plan, which would include Bright, it would be more neighborhood-based sales. So I could go to Bright Valley and start making these calls, but I would need a Bright Valley person to say, not this person, they're too far away, this person, you know,
right,
to help me give that local knowledge. And that's why we really emphasize local knowledge, because they can look at it and say, you know, because most of the time when you get, I see smoke, I heard on the scanner there's something at walk and don't walk. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we know, you know, people around that need to know about it, because they may or may not know about it. They may be out of town, out of the area, at work, at school, what have you. Or like on our issues, most of the fires start outside Bear Valley, yeah, on the 223 side, and the fire comes up. So unless the wind's blowing this way, you don't smell anything, you don't see smoke, you don't hear anything. All the helicopter activity is on the other side of the hill, so you have no clue what's going on until it takes over.
Yeah.
So, did that answer?
I got two quick questions.
Sir?
What is the deal with a plastic bag and a horse? I've never heard of that.
You don't have horses.
When they're flying through the air with the wind, they are balloons.
Balloons in their mouth. Here's my second question. And Terry, you kind of asked ahead of me, but we just finished a very horrendous fire season.
November's still
a bone up there.
Hopefully.
Horrendous fire season, like I said.
Yeah.
Has your plan been put into action?
We have practiced it with Bear Valley, and we're in the process of setting it up with other communities. Stallion Springs is now taking it up, and a few of our other communities. But it's been mostly word of mouth. So,
well, does a county organization have to adopt it?
No. This is neighbor helping neighbor type stuff. Your homeowners association could do it, could sponsor. But basically, you need a way to get in touch with your animal owners. Now, if you have a horseman's association or one of the brews or one of the clubs, that would work. The mule clubs or something like that. So you have a ready list of people, and they can put that together.
And this group made a face page, and it was brand spanking new when the first fire hit.
That was a day old.
Yeah, and it was trial by fire, and it was magnificent. It was constant information going in and out. And it has started to be used, but we're still, it's a work in progress.
I mean, a certain number that people can call? I mean, how did... Not yet?
It's local. If someone calls me from Bakersfield, I can't help them. I don't know Bakersfield.
Where are you from?
You're going to call Nick.
You're Bear Valley.
Okay.
Right. So this is just a first step. This is what we developed. This is what we were putting out to the communities. And
this is great.
It's one of the communities that we're hitting.
Now, so the Bear Valley community has a plan. It's called EAP. Equine
emergency.
I didn't choose the name. And it has been used on what? How many occasions?
Three or four times.
This is to take that type that plan and add more to it, and then bring it to the greater Tehachapi Valley, and then hopefully further.
Say, like, for example, we're set up now, and Stallion Springs are pretty close to being set up.
Okay.
So, because we're using the same plan,
the same
if
model.
They're in trouble, they can call us, we can come help.
As long as there's someone there that can.
They can say, we haven't got anybody to come over here and phone down this list.
So, if someone wanted to call you, how would they? I don't see a phone number anywhere on this.
My email should be on the bottom of those documents.
Oh, okay, that email address, that's the way to contact you?
Yes. Yeah, and then technically work for Debbie.
As well.
In this case,
work
technically
work
for Debbie.
You don't work for me.
You work for me.
No.
Okay.
No. I can say that.
That's kind of my question is.
She puts a lot of time in.
Fit into the big picture. I mean, there's county emergency services, there's animal services, there's your organization, there's a couple of other things that Debbie... How do all these things fit?
So
I need a flow chart.
Sure.
It's baby steps.
it's a baby step.
Baby steps.
But it is on the community level. Mm-hmm. So I'm an emergency manager. I don't do horses. I just know about the bag thing because it was just eye-opening to me. So I do disasters most days. So you have your community level. You know, it could be even your house level. You know, something breaks in the house, you have your own personal disaster. And then it elevates. Something breaks on the street. So in this case, this is a community-based. So it fits in with the larger disaster response entities, but it's not officially part of them yet. At this point, it's a larger neighbor, a more community helping.
I guess what I'm looking for is, someone calls me and says, I have a disaster in Tehachapi. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to look at something that says, okay, the county can do this, you can contact so-and-so for this, you can contact so-and-so for this.
Do you get calls like that?
No, but I'm just saying, okay. If I did, right. I want the ability to see you listed, or my community mm-hmm. group mm-hmm. listed among all the other emergency preparedness contacts.
Well,
so that's kind of what I'm...
And that's the plan.
That's the plan. Okay. But that level of planning is not an overnight thing.
Right.
And that's why we're starting at the community level, where we can get immediate results. As soon as you all have each other's phone number and know where each other live and have it on a map and say, okay, something's going on here. I need to call these people. You've helped yourselves. This is almost... are you all familiar with CERT, with the Community Emergency Response Team?
No.
So
we'll train you.
I'm a trainer. We'll do that another time.
They really
but it's basically
you have
a very good system. But the idea of neighbor helping neighbor, supplementing the professional emergency responders, and this is that level of response. So at this point, we're not on the responders list, but the responders know in our area that we do have something. So they know, and we've told them about this, we've socialized them with this, show them what we can do, show them our plans, that it works with their incident command system, that they know we will be taking care of the horse stuff. They don't have to. And if they have an issue, they know they can call us. So it's part of that, get your neighbors together, figure out who it is, and then let the community responders know.
And the goal is also to put this plan together and then reach out to other communities who are interested in doing their own
And that's how we made a template. We took our communications function, took off Bear Valley, threw in some tips, tricks, stuff that's worked for us, and that's available for anybody.
So, for example, I live in Wasco, and we have a lot of, you know, large animals.
Sure.
But we're sort of a farming town. It's not really like up in the hills. Is there less or more risk or the same?
Different risk. It's just a different risk. I mean, every location, wherever you're standing, has some risk, whether it's flood, fire, airplane falling out of the sky, whatever it is. Earthquake, whatever.
And the other quick comment I'd say is every single individual household that is ready with their horses and animals is one less for the first responders to deal with. Those people have already... And one of the phone calls was, oh, we're in Portugal, but after your last presentation, Fiona, the halters, the lead ropes, the water, the hay, the paperwork is all in the trailer, it's hitched up, and the pet sitter's ready to take them out.
That's one of the two calls that went the way we thought they would. But to further answer, we are right now in the middle of fire season. And being in the hills and having a large tree kill area in our high country, this is kind of our focus. Now, next winter, or this winter, it's going to be flooding because now we have a bunch of bare area that's going to...
Sometimes we get rain.
Your issues, and they're a big deal for you. And if they're affecting you and your community and your animals, it's a big deal for you. So it may not be as, you know, newsworthy. Maybe you have, you know, some sort of a local utility outage that basically shuts down
the water lines,
or, you know, power outage. I saw a presentation in Long Beach, had a large section of city that had no power for 3 days. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a disaster. You know, after the first day, you can't turn your cell phone. You have half the population won't know yet because they can't turn your cell phone. That would be me.
Adam's going through the dolls.
Is
that it?
Can you just state your names one more time for me?
Sure. Jeannie Taylor.
Fiona Nelson.
Thank you.
And I want to thank you guys for driving down here for the presentation.
Yeah, thank you for having the equipment.
You want to be prepared? You call us.
Talking about preparedness.
All righty.
Yes.
Yeah, let's. We don't have any business, so we can have a motion for adjournment.
I make a motion.
Okay. All in favor? Any opposed? Okay, so we'll adjourn until Wednesday, October 19th. Same bat time. Same